Today's show is, of course, brought to you by presenting sponsor Cufflinks.com, Hook and Albert, Constantino, Montgrappa, so many others on sale right now at Cufflinks.com. What you got to do is go over to Cufflinks.com/DVR and use code DESIGNER20. Beltology. Come on. This is great stuff. This is wearable art. Now, I know we talk a lot about the Marvel stuff, Game of Thrones, of course, but I always like to remind you that if you're getting married, you're having an event, Cufflinks.com is the place to go. They will service all your needs that you need for a fantastic event like this and get you looking great when you walk out there and stand up in front of people. Go to Cufflinks.com/DVR, use code DESIGNER20, and you're going to get some great stuff. You can also use, don't forget, code DVR20 and get 20. Today is Wednesday, March 6, 2019, and this is Daily DVR. Welcome back, everyone, to Daily DVR. Remember to check us out at DVRpodcast.com. You can email us, DVRpodcast@gmail.com, and on Twitter, DVR Podcast, Facebook, Daily DVR. Today I've got a fantastic interview with my friend, my former co-podcaster, just a creative guy. This guy makes music. He writes books. He's a lawyer. His name's Alex Hahn. And we're going to talk about his new podcast. We're going to talk about his books about Prince. It's a fantastic interview. I really appreciate Alex giving me this opportunity to talk with him. And I just want to tell you, go out and subscribe to his podcast. It's called The Lost Versus Podcast. Of course, he had to get the word lost in there, right? I love it. Lost Versus Podcast. And this is the descriptor. In 1999, Prince sued the fan magazine Uptown. This is the story of how the podcast host served as the magazine's defense attorney. You've never heard anything like this podcast. It's interesting. And Alex, like I say in the interview, he has a great way of mixing his fandom with a professional historian and a more holistic and objective outlook on Prince. And it's a really, the podcast is awesome. Both of his books are great. He's coming out with a new book. Check out the podcast. I hope you enjoy this interview with Alex. Support him. He's a great guy, and he's really working hard. That creative spirit, he's got it, baby, from day one. I do want to remind you all that this Friday, this Friday I'm going to get back to a little news, cover some news and stuff like that. I'm also going to be covering just a little bit of what's coming on the TV, what has premiered, what's going to premiere. Want to kind of get back to that. But I am going to get back to Game of Thrones Season 2. So if you are doing your rewatch, if you have any ideas about Season 2, send them to me. I'd love to talk about it. I'd love to have someone else's perspective as well. I always do. I want to thank everybody for all the emails I've been getting lately about the show. I really appreciate it. We're getting into high gear. Game of Thrones is coming, and Daily DVR is going to continue too. So I hope you enjoy this episode with Alex. It was a whole lot of fun. Here he is, the man himself, Alex Hahn. All right, everybody. Well, I told you I was going to have a very special guest today, and I do. And many of you know him from past podcasts and hit songs like Hate on Kate, The Man I Used to Be, and so many others. It's the man, the myth, the legend. He's here today to talk about his podcast, his music, his books, his experience writing about and being a fan of, and sometimes being legally involved with the great artist Prince. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, the man he is today, Alex Hahn.
Oh, Axel, thank you so much for that great intro. I'm very excited to be with you. Very excited about, your new show. This is just fantastic. And as your listeners probably know, we go back, about a decade now. We got to know each other in the Lost days when you had the Lost Mythos podcast, yeah, which was an absolute pioneer and extremely influential podcast, really setting the tone for a lot of what came after it in the Lost world. So it's just, it's awesome that you've become a podcast icon, you know, more and more these days.
Well, hey, man, you taught me everything I know. If it weren't for those terse, kind of aggressive, but super funny emails that you first sent me, I don't know if we'd be here right now.
It's a credit to you for not saying, who is this guy? Why would I respond to it? It was probably something obnoxious. I've mellowed a little bit over the years, I must say.
I know. We try, right? But it's hard. It can be difficult in today's age to stay mellow, but we're going to try. And one of the things that makes us all stay mellow is love, baby. So that's what we're going to talk about, your love for Prince and your appreciation and what you've been working on. And, you know, we did so many podcasts together, Lost, Politics, Breaking Bad, everything. And we never really talked too much about Prince. I always knew that you had written a book. And now you've written a new book. You have a podcast. You came out with an album just, a year or so ago, a little bit longer than that. My time is messed up because I have a kid. But I just want to talk all about that, man. So kind of fill us in. You, what is it about Prince? How did you kind of start being a fan? Or what was your journey that started with him? Because, you know, I actually did research for this interview. I did research on you, and I found interviews, and, you know, you're known in this community. You've done some great work with your two biographies you've done. And I just think that it's so funny the way you can talk about so many other things, but then this has been such a big part of your life. So how did your journey with Prince and music in general begin?
Well, it's very, very interesting. And as you mentioned, I've started a podcast, which is called Lost Verses. And it actually tells the whole story. It's going to be kind of a soup to nuts discussion and sort of recounting of my life as a biographer of Prince. It's kind of a weird idea for a podcast, to be honest. And, it's fascinating to be doing it again because, you know, we had so much fun podcasting back in the day. I have not done any podcasting for a while, but I always liked the medium. You know, I really always enjoyed what we did back then. I mean, podcasting is very, very challenging, you know, as you well know. So I'm reacquainting myself with the medium. But so this show, Lost Verses, which is available on iTunes, tells the story of my fascination with Prince and also the trials and tribulations of writing about him and trying to be a biographer. And, you know, as you mentioned, I've written two books about Prince and I'm working on a third. So the first book was called Possessed, and the second book was called The Rise of Prince. Possessed was written all the way back in 2004. So it covered his career up until about the turn of the century. And then after Prince died, I decided to essentially update a lot of that material, and that produced The Rise of Prince, which I wrote with a partner named Laura Tebert in Minneapolis. She lives in the Minneapolis area. So there has always been that fascination with him. And so I thought to myself, you know, maybe it would be interesting for both fans of Prince and just people who've struggled in the artistic arena, you know, writing books, writing music or whatever, to hear the kind of behind the scenes story, because, you know, it has been anything but smooth. You know, there have been all kinds of ups and downs through the course of writing these two books. So I kind of tell that story, you know, blow by blow. And the podcast, the first two episodes, tells the story of how I actually represented in a lawsuit this Prince fan publication called Uptown. And this was back in 1999. And so Uptown got sued by Prince, you know, who was basically suing his own fans in some fashion. And I won't belabor that too much because the podcast tells the whole detailed story of it. But that's, you know, that's how I get the podcast going. And from there, I talk about how I, you know, gradually was able to create the first book. I mean, writing books and getting books published is, it's a bear, man. It's very, very difficult. You know, the first book was with a publisher, you know, Billboard Books, which was related to Billboard Magazine at the time. The second book was self-published. The third book's going to be self-published. And I believe a lot in self-publishing these days. I think it gives you more control and you're still able to sell a reasonable amount of books. But, you know, none of this has been easy. You know, it's been a very up and down process. It's been painful at times. It's been chaotic at times. So the podcast is really designed to tell that story. And I also have a blog, which kind of teases the podcast episodes, which is called lostverses.net.
That now, excuse me, gosh, I was getting choked up there, man, hearing about your hard times. I know that, you're absolutely right though, man. You taking on writing a book, especially when you have a publisher first and you're involved with Billboard and then you're doing self-publishing, it takes so much of you to, I mean, it's just like, I know, doing this podcast, you have to wake up and motivate yourself that there is a light at the end of this tunnel, right? That you're going to share this with people and that all this hard work is going to be meaningful. Now, what I want to know too is, and I would like to maybe take a step back and ask, where did your interest of print start? I know you're a musician. What is it about him that so fascinated you to have him be so much a big part of your life?
Yeah, so I got into Prince, you know, around the same time as probably many people did, which was Purple Rain. So, you know, I was about, how old was I at the time? I was probably like 18 years old, you know, when Purple Rain came out. And, you know, I really dug it. You know, so at the time as a musician, when I was, you know, throughout high school, I was really into mostly sort of alternative. We didn't even have alternative music then. It was called punk rock. You know, it was before that phrase existed. It was more all called punk rock, you know, and post-punk and things like that. I was in a post-punk band in high school, so I was into stuff that was, you know, edgy and cool and all that. And, you know, Prince became this huge commercial artist with Purple Rain, but I still found the music to be very interesting and exploratory. And, you know, when I discovered him, I was able to then go back and explore all of his albums from Purple Rain on, and sorry, from everything up to Purple Rain, you know, everything that preceded it. And that's a process of fascinating discovery for anyone that hasn't done it. You know, you go back and you listen to the immediately preceding albums, which were Dirty Mind, Controversy, and 1999. And these are just really sort of experimental albums, very edgy. There's a lot of profanity. They're just really kind of out there records. And Purple Rain, you know, falls into that category in many respects as well. I mean, it was this big commercial hit, but there's also just so much under the hood and as far as musical experimentation, tremendous musicianship. And then, you know, for the succeeding records after Purple Rain, which is Around the World in a Day, Parade, and then Sign of the Times, was just this trilogy of amazing, innovative albums that just comprised so many different musical styles. So it was really a fascination with his musical process, the way he was pushing boundaries of music. And all of that. So that's what really fascinated me about him. To me, you know, during that sort of his really incandescent period during the 1980s, he was kind of a figure like the Beatles to me at the time. You know, the Beatles were always pushing boundaries, doing new things, exploring new sounds. He was the guy that was doing that, you know, of any mainstream artist, you know, because basically in the 1980s, you have four major commercial artists. You have Prince, Madonna, Bruce Springsteen, and Michael Jackson. You know, that was a time when the whole music industry coalesced around a few major artists.
The monoculture, right? Where you could, things could be focused.
Right. And then eventually in the 1990s and continuing much more so in the 2000s and up to this day, it's incredibly fractured in some ways for the good, you know, because it's like, as an independent musician, you can sort of release an album and develop your own fan base or whatever. But at the time, it was rallied around just a few major artists who were sort of, you know, anointed by the music industry to some extent, but also who were connecting with critics and fans. And that was those four. And of those four, it's like Prince was in a class by himself as far as, you know, the innovation, the experimentation, the pushing of boundaries. So that's kind of what lay behind my desire to write about him.
That's interesting, man. You know, that's the thing about Prince. You find people who are like secret huge Prince fans, or you mention his name and there's a reverence there. I mean, I'll tell you, I love Prince, man. I saw Purple Rain in the movie theater when I was a kid. I was way too young to see it. I saw it in Union, New Jersey, next to the Union Market, this nasty theater. And I loved it. And I became obsessed with Prince. I listened to all his albums. I was also obsessed with the Batman soundtrack, which he took to levels like hereto unexplored by film soundtracks. Like, he took the Batman soundtrack and he turned it into like an opus. Like, I was blown away. I remember, I think, like, he just always did things that people just didn't know what to do with, right? That were kind of overwhelmingly creative and artistic. And today, right, we throw around this term genius and we say, oh, that person's a genius because they have like a billion Instagram followers or so. You know, it's popularity equals somehow greatness or genius. But the things you're talking about, people see the outside of Prince, right? The sexuality, the like tiny man with a huge power coming out of him, which is so fascinating too, you know? I mean, then there's of course the Dave Chappelle basketball skits, and Prince also like gains this prowess as one of the best basketball players who didn't play in the NBA or something. There's just such an aura. But what you're talking about, his musicianship and the virtuoso skill that he possessed, is something that I think is kind of not talked about as much. And I like that when I read your interview and listen to your pod, that's something that's so important to you. There's that basis of an appreciation of the work he put into his craft.
Absolutely. No, very, very well said. I mean, yeah, and that's another fascinating thing. So you look at the music and, you know, as we've just discussed, I mean, that's compelling in its own right. And that's something, you know, as an author and a biographer, you think, hey, I want to write about this guy. But then you get in deeper into what he was like, not only just as a musician, but a sheer kind of workaholic, someone with a dedication, obsessive dedication to his craft. I mean, this guy unquestionably is the most prolific pop music artist in history, you know, in terms of sheer volume of songs. Now, you know, quantity doesn't necessarily equal quantity, quality. So we're not going to argue that every single song he created was brilliant. And, you know, he was probably prolific to a fault. Yeah. You know, he should have stepped back and sort of refreshed his perspective. You know, one of the things I look at in these books is this was a guy that didn't do things like go hiking, you know, and he didn't, when he visited a country like Europe, he wouldn't necessarily be, you know, exploring the Louvre and doing the things that, you know, I'm not here to say how he should have lived his life. But as a biographer, you do sort of look at the tragic elements and the imperfections of your subject. And I've taken heat for that because there's so many fans that are obsessive and want to sort of see no wrong in this guy. And I'm not here to bash him, but these are critical biographies. They're psychological biographies. They explore his inner conflicts and sort of imperfections, which in some ways include that workaholic tendency, that he was just so prolific, maybe to a fault, as I said, but that's another fascinating thing to write about and think about.
Taking a little break here to talk to you about cufflinks.com. We got a lot coming up this month. Right now, we got the designer sale. We're going to use code DESIGNER20, get 20% off. That's March 1st to 10th. March 11th to 17th, they're having a tie sale. 30% off, buy one, give one tie code. I'm not going to tell you the code yet because it's not going to be good until March 11th. Then we're going to have an NCAA 30% off sale for March Madness. And guess what? They're having a Marvel sale for Endgame, baby. You know it. Come on. It's happening in April. We're going to get there. But cufflinks.com/DVR. Go there today. They've been our presenting sponsor now since when? November? It's going fantastic. We love the partnership. Thank you, cufflinks.com. Support the podcast by going to cufflinks.com/DVR. And order some fantastic stuff. Ooh, I got good stuff to give away. I can't wait. I'm itching to give stuff away. It's coming soon. All right, let's get back to the interview with Alex.
Yeah, Alex, that's something I was thinking about today. And I was thinking about knowing that we were going to do this interview. And why I have always appreciated the way that you've talked about Prince, written about him, the way that you see this, because last night, we don't need to get into big controversy or whatever, that's not why we're here, but last night I watched that Finding Neverland Michael Jackson documentary. Now, regardless of your feelings on that documentary, it's indisputable that Michael Jackson was a strange, strange man. I remember saying to my wife, if you take away any of the part when they start alleging sexual abuse and just stop it before that happens, this guy like created a theme park he lived in another world. And when you see some of his fans, it's as though they are incapable of seeing this, right? That they love him so adoringly through his music and what he represents in their own life that they can't even bring themselves to admit, well, maybe it's not normal for a 30-something-year-old dude to be sleeping in a bed with a 6-year-old that he met a week ago.
Right.
That's not normal, regardless if anything happened. And one of the things that I enjoyed, especially listening to the first two episodes of your podcast, was the way that you are just upfront. Like, look, Prince was obsessive, creative, and there's where I can't even, you're so eloquent, but you have a good way of being just honest about he was human, and when you create so much, you give up other things. It's impossible for you to maintain a balance, and an imbalanced life leads to the type of stories we hear of people like creative people like this, whether it's like you're talking about traveling the world and never seeing anything but a hotel room or a recording studio. What's the difference? You might as well be inside virtual reality, right?
Well said. Yeah,
that's what I really enjoy about your perspective, is that I don't find you to be like a fan biographer. You're a biographer. You're looking at him as in a holistic way. You are a fan and you have a love, and that's what propelled you to do it. But your point isn't to just like, why, if I say, why did you write this book? Your idea is to explore and understand, not to just heap adulation on someone. And the good comes with the bad. And that was one of the cool things about Prince too, is he explored so much of that, weirdness inside him. That was so much a part of his music and his expression, right?
Yeah, I mean, he did. I mean, you can argue in some ways that he could have gone even deeper, because he wasn't, a self-reflective sort of confessional guy.
Oh, true, true. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't like Elliot Smith, but I mean, just with the sexuality or darkness or just like you're saying, he wasn't afraid to kind of push boundaries, obviously.
Oh, yeah. And that is incredibly appealing. And yeah, the sexuality aspect and the androgyny and all of that, you know, that was boundary challenging in its own right, too. You know, at the time in the 80s, you didn't have a lot of, you know, integration in bands. And you obviously had a racial stratification in the music industry where there were very few artists like Michael Jackson, Prince, Stevie Wonder, and so forth that crossed over to white audiences.
Yeah.
And even someone like Stevie Wonder was sort of ghettoized. You know, Billboard had something called the Black Chart back then. Yeah, you know, I think it lasted until the 80s.
Yeah.
The Black Chart, you know, so Prince was determined to kind of...
Well, then they just changed it to urban, right? Then they just call everything urban. Like, I would say, like, why is that urban? Like, does that everything have to come from that inner city? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, but that's the way we categorize.
Right. And at that time in our society, you know, going back to the 70s into the early 80s, you know, our cities were African American dominated. You know, many American cities were impoverished places. And so it was this code, you know, urban means black, you know, because a lot of most black people live in the cities. You know, of course, that changed, you know, and unfortunately now, you know, we have minority communities driven out of cities. But no, you're absolutely right. So, you know, yeah, all that stuff, you know, was fascinating. But yeah, I mean, I see myself as a fan and an admirer, but also a biographer. Mm-hmm. I mean, fortunately, I do at root have admiration for the guy. Like, that is the foundation for me. From there, I become a biographer. But I wouldn't be interested in being a biographer if I didn't have this admiration.
Definitely.
Someone like Michael Jackson, I have difficulty. I can't get over that hurdle into true admiration. You know, just because these things that are so disturbing that you've mentioned, you know, even what's undisputed, right? I haven't seen the documentary yet, and I understand there's disputed facts, but even what's undisputed, I think by his own admission, those things skeeve me out, you know, those things skeeve me out to the extent that, you know, I would find it kind of more, it wouldn't really move me in the way that writing about Prince does, because you know, at root there's just so much to admire in the man. But then if you're going to be a serious biographer, you have to explore all dimensions, including the unsavory ones or the less appetizing ones.
Yeah, definitely, because if you don't do that, you don't understand, right? It's just it's not an exploration. You could just be like recounting, oh, and then he had a concert here, and then he had... If you don't get into it, it's like when we talk about television shows or any politics, anything, you got to get in, you have to kind of, as they say in the progressive cultures, lean into your discomfort, right? You have to open yourself up to that understanding. I'd like to ask, how did you deal with that internally as a person? You talk a lot about the legal case that you were involved with on the podcast about Prince taking action against a fan magazine that he felt he wanted to control his own story, his own narrative. And the way that you explain that is really interesting, but I could only imagine being a musician yourself, putting yourself out and I mean, you know, you're a singer, you're a guitar player, composer, and just singing too. The act of singing is so intimate and it just makes you so vulnerable that, you know, you must have this kind of personal connection to Prince. How have you worked? Do you find you're challenging yourself when you're writing, when you're doing the podcast, of when do you insert how you feel? When do you, you know, how do you kind of, how do you figure that out?
Yeah, that is very tough. You know, I'm struggling with that because it's sort of like, who is the audience for this podcast? I mean, I know it's Prince fans to some degree, to a significant degree. And how are they going to be perceiving it? And then it's also people that might be more casual fans and that are more kind of interested in just the story, you know, of a biographer's journey. So it's complicated. And you mentioned music, and I appreciate, you know, the opportunity for the somewhat shameless plug there, but it does kind of tie in with the discussion. You know, Prince has influenced me as a musician as well. And I hesitate, you know, to declare myself a musician. It's something I do, you know, as a hobby, essentially. But I released an album, as you mentioned, last year called The Erotic Review. So it's under my name, Alex Hahn, called The Erotic Review. And it's, you know, a sexually explicit record. And in that sense, I was very influenced by, for example, the Prince record, Dirty Mind, which covered a lot of disturbing sexual themes. I mean, some of it was pure fantasy, such as incest is addressed on the record. And my record, you know, and I'm not going to get into really how much is real and how much is sheer fantasy, but it does deal with transgender themes, which I don't think have been explored a lot, you know, in music. So in doing that, I was definitely influenced by Prince, and I was also trying to be emotionally candid. Yeah. And that's something, you know, again, with Prince, I think it's interesting that he's very revealing, but not necessarily emotionally candid. And I'm not saying he should have been, yeah. But, you know, I do find, you know, artists like, say, John Lennon, you know, in his solo incarnation, you know, records like Plastic Ono Band are just so revealing.
And, oh, my God, man. You think of like a classic, like just I it's so funny you say that, because I was thinking about how in so many ways the song Julia basically created the whole subgenre of sad, like white guys on a guitar. You know what I mean? Right. Like, one, nice. But then again, the Beatles, but like Prince too, were almost able to create genres with one song. And when you look back on it and you see so many people inspired by what they did. And that's a great point you made about, and I don't mean to, I know you were making a different point, but I just wanted to say real quick, the way you said that about how Prince was so, like, so exploratory, revealing, but then you don't think of him as like a confessional songwriter, right? Like, there was a different way of exploring things that was, and with the sexuality and a lot of issues with women, right, in what he writes about, and writing for women and being involved, being surrounded by women, right, that I've always found really fascinating, that kind of way of revealing but not revealing. It's very seducing, isn't it?
It is. And there, you know, there again, yeah, it's fascinating because, you know, as a critical biographer, again, you look at all dimensions of it. And the fact that he was so pioneering in terms of sexual things thematically, I think is, you know, extremely laudable and an extremely important part of his legacy. But there again, it's not, you know, self-reflective.
Yeah.
You know, anyone that's having sex with thousands of people, you know, I think in an ideal world, you know, you sit back and reflect on that. And, you know,
it's a lot to reflect on.
Right. But no, it is. Yeah, you could spend all day, but you're sort of, you're looking, you're just, I mean, to ask that question, like, why am I doing this?
Oh, yes.
You know, and mm-hmm. somewhat in my own music, and I yeah. think in this podcast, you know, I'm more trying to, you know, be sort of self-reflective and self-critical. And again, I'm not trying to sort of slam Prince for not being that way, but I just find it interesting as a biographer that in some ways he was revealing, in other respects, he was very opaque. I mean, Julie is a great example, the John Lennon song. You know, that's about his mother. And a lot of the songs on Plastic Ono Band are about his mother. And it's like he talks about, you know, his pain that he experienced as a result of these, you know, explorations. And Prince did some of that. You know, I think he could have done more. And I don't, you know, some people, I think maybe justifiably so, felt that my first book was too much of my critical lens on top of Prince. But at the same time, I do find it interesting. And there is that part of me that thinks about, well, what could have been, you know, what if Prince had, you know, been more like Elliott Smith or something like that, or John Lennon, and been willing to, you know, plumb the recesses of his own, you know, pain and of his psyche. But, you know, so it's just fascinating to think about, you know, it really is.
Do you think that perhaps in that did push you, like you're talking about in your last album, dealing with sexuality and transgender issues in a way that you may have not been comfortable before, but seeing the kind of like, seeing the huge creative output of Prince, but then seeing where you might see a hole, it almost kind of gives you power in yourself to explore that. You know, sometimes the things that we're attracted to, music, art, that is quite opposite or lacks something that we ourselves want to express. Does that make sense? It's kind of like an almost a black hole type situation with like sucks everything out in except that, and so you all you see is nothing. You know what I mean? And within yourself, it kind of pulls you and wants you to do that. Because I found that so interesting when you released that album and I listened to it and I said, wow, man, this took a lot of courage for you to sing about this stuff and the way that you expressed just your own ideas, but through other methods and people and such, you know? But I thought that was really... That took a lot of courage, man.
Well, thank you. And you know, I'm honored and flattered that you gave the record a listen. You know, there's so much out there to listen to, including one can go now explore Prince's catalog. But, you know, I think it's interesting that, you know, for me, the record never would have existed, but for Prince in many respects, because, you know, I performed just about everything on the album. And that notion of Prince as a one-man band, which he was through much of his career, that was extremely influential to me in making it feel like, you know, I can basically do everything in myself, you know, not, you know, I wouldn't remotely compare myself to someone like Prince, but just that template of being able to do it. And then, you know, the sexuality, the willingness to take that on, I think was influenced by Prince too. And then, you know, as artists, we are influenced by a variety of different things. And leaping off from there, we get into the more confessional stuff. And I didn't do it necessarily in the sense of like, well, Prince didn't do that, therefore I'm going to do it. But more thinking about, you know, other kinds of music that influenced me that's more sort of diaristic and describing experiences. And, you know, alluding again to Lennon, it seems like who we both, you know, have a soft spot for. I mean, this album, the two themes of it, you know, my album, The Erotic Review, is one is transgender sexual themes. I'm not trans, by the way, but the album is sort of my fascination with transgender women, if you will, which, you know, I've learned that sort of many kind of middle-aged hetero men at some point develop that. At least some subset of them. And then the other theme, you know, my mother died in 2016, very, very suddenly. And the record starts to, the record gets into that issue. So it's influenced both by my mother's death and transgender themes. And at the risk of, you know, getting too deep into the confessional stuff, I only started having that fascination with transgender women after my mother died. And I was sort of thinking about, you know, why did that happen? What, you know, what is this sort of Oedipal thing going on? And my mother was this like very, very powerful, strong woman with almost like certain masculine qualities that we would associate stereotypically with men. So I began to sort of think about and cross-pollinate those issues. And, you know, yeah, I guess all that takes courage. It feels, you know, somewhat funny to talk about, but I think also as an artist, it's, you know, I find value in getting as deep as you can. And, you know, having lost my mother so suddenly, it is, you know, that old stereotype of, you know, we live for today, right? You don't know when it's all going to go away. So you do the things that excite you. You know, you pursue the projects that excite you. You know, you get on the phone with Axel Foley and another, you know, a joyful being who's doing what you want to do, you know? So that's beautiful stuff, you know, to sort of be living that life to the fullest that you can.
Yeah, definitely, man. So speaking of that, what is your plans with the podcast? And because I love it, man. I mean, I've been honestly, and I'm not just saying this because if I had just happened upon this, I would be like, people, you should listen to this, you know? It's a really interesting story. How long do you plan on doing the podcast? What's the plan on that? You're writing a new book. Tell us a little bit about what more you want to explore.
Gotcha. Yeah. So the new book is going to cover, you know, another swath of Prince's life. It's going to, you know, the last book went from basically his birth, 1958, through 1988. So the book is called The Rise of Prince, 1958 to 1988. And this new one is going to go, you know, roughly from like 1988 to 96. So covering another 8 years of his life. The podcast is interesting. I mean, I'd forgotten sort of how challenging podcasting can be. I really appreciate that you're enjoying it. And that would be the hope, to create something that could be interesting to anyone, not just Prince fans. I would say it's ultimately going to be somewhat of a limited edition podcast. Exactly how many episodes, I don't know, but eventually we're going to get into real time, you know, because it's sort of like it tells the story of me writing these earlier books. And once I've exhausted that, I'll be up into real time and talking about, you know, the anxieties and challenges I'm having writing this current book, which are many. And so at some point, you know, we get into real time, and then I guess the story ends with the release of the next book. So that's, you know, sort of the plan of the whole thing. But it is, you know, when you do a podcast that's not necessarily two people talking to one another, but just one guy talking and trying to create a story, I'd forgotten how hard that is.
I know, man. When I think back, just to give a little lost throwback here, when I think back of what Donald used to do with the Myth Arcs, and how I honestly, podcasting has exploded, and there's so many people doing all these different things, and still, I'll tell you, and I know Donald is always telling me I compliment the dude too much, but I still have not found an equal. When I've turned something on, I've just been blown away by like the production and the love and the time. And that was a lot about what you're talking about, mixing in your love for something. People call it being a fan, an admirer, a historian of a certain person or genre or TV show, you know, and your own pure love, and just having fun too. You know, and that's what I like about this. I really think this podcast is awesome, man. I want to hear this story. I hope it goes like 100 episodes, because I think you found a really great balance of talking about Prince, talking about the law, and talking about yourself, and then wrapping it all together with your experiences as like a kind of a human being, relatable in a relatable way. Because I could only imagine, you know, I've been a fan, music-wise, I think probably Jimi Hendrix, Kurt Cobain, Elliott Smith. I saw Elliott Smith in concert, I don't know, 25, 30 times. One time I took a pee next to him before he went on stage. And he even mumbled at me, "Hey, man." And the thing with Elliott Smith is, much like we're talking about, a lot of times you find that these super creative people, obsessive people, have suffer from mental illness, suffer from anxieties and depressions, and have a hard time. And that is, it's like, unfortunately, it goes back to that old adage of, like, you know, and I know, I think there's less so that's a thing with kids these days, but I know, Alex, we're around the same age, but it used to be a big thing, right? Like, do you have to be crazy to be creative? Do you have to be self-destructive, right? You know, are you, if you're not self-destructive or something like that, then you can't be creative, you know? And one of the things about Prince is, I mean, we obviously know that there were self-destructive parts of his personality, but that joy that you were talking about, he has this kind of effervescence about him, right? And just kind of, I mean, if you think about, like, Let's Go Crazy or Party Like It's 1999, right? Like, it's joy. There's a joyfulness in there. I mean, you know, it comes, I know he had, like, kind of, if my understanding is correct, he came up, like, in churches and singing and that, in groups like that, you know? So there's always that kind of joy that's in there. So I can dig that, man, because a lot of my heroes have been, well, I just listed three guys who killed themselves. When I was Hendrix, Cobain, right, and Elliott Smith, I mean, Hendrix is debatable, but the way he was living his life, it's safe to say that that's what led him to that. But do you, when you, I, you know, we're kind of going to wrap up soon, and I just wanted to ask, when you write about Prince dying and how you, or when you get to that podcast, because I know I read an interview where you talked a little bit about that. How did that affect you, and how do you think that you're going to, you know, express yourself about that?
Well, one interesting thing is that Prince died on my 50th birthday.
Oh, man.
So that was kind of a trip in its own right, you know? And now every year you have this Prince celebration that they have at Paisley Park, and it's kind of like my birthday as well, you know, obviously is. So it's kind of this weird, you know, ambivalent thing, you know, yeah, that he died on this central birthday in the same year that my mom died, just a couple of months after that. And all these strands sort of, you know, came together. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, briefly, you know, what you touched on with podcasting and all that, Prince was someone that, you know, he was creative and prolific throughout his career, but he also had this explosion of creativity for a period of time. And you mentioned, you know, Donald of Lost fame, who, if I'm not mistaken, he doesn't podcast anymore.
No, I'm trying to get him out of retirement.
And you know, arguably, you know, it was for him that same thing, an explosion of activity. You know, every artist has their arc, you know, and it's like, what he did was revolutionary. And it's like the fact that those podcasts are no longer available online. I mean, some of this sort of humor and creativity was like at a caliber of anything you see like in this society. But it's just, again, sort of like artists can have an explosion of creativity and you just, you sort of ride the centrifugal force of the universe as long as you can. And then maybe it's not there as much anymore. So that's another interesting theme.
Yeah. When what's the next step as far as the podcast and everything? You're going to be releasing them every week, and then when do you think that the book's going to come out?
I would say the book, I'm not even sure if I'll get it out in 2019. Probably not. So I would say probably early 2020. The podcast, you know, I'm going to try to keep it to something around a week, once a week, but it may take a little longer, maybe, you know, slightly longer to get one out. And, you know, the podcast will get even more kind of confessional, and some of that stuff about depression will weave its way in there. I'm not going to belabor that issue in the podcast, but as you'll see, the very next episode deals with me, you know, getting depressed about stuff. And, you know, I'm not Elliot Smith, you know, obviously not creatively, but nor psychologically, but I more plant myself in that camp than not. You know, I've had my own struggles, and some of that it comes out in the album. I mean, I don't really find it all that appealing when people kind of wallow in too much of their, you know, or broadcast too much about their own mental health struggles. But I also think it can be part of a story in a way that hopefully, you know, it has some artistic value as well. So that definitely floats in and out of it.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah, I agree with you, man. There's a difference between, I agree with you too, especially in our ultra confessional society. You know, there is a difference between kind of, as the term says, wallowing in, which can sometimes be hurtful for people with depression or something to hear even that. But you can understand, because I think even a therapist or a person who's educated on it would say that it's true. Sometimes you need to kind of lift up out of that and give yourself a wider perspective. And that's what I like about what you're doing just in general, man, when you're with your exploration of Prince and his music and his effect on culture and society, which, like you're saying, was so great, that you've got to kind of look at all parts of it, and you can't get caught in the molasses of one particular thing. And that's what I like about what you do with the podcast too. And I encourage everyone to listen to it and get your books and listen to your album too, which is incredible. And I'm going to have all of that in the show notes. We're going to have a bunch of links, put that up on the website at DVR Podcast as well, so everyone can explore Alex, baby, because that's what we're doing here today on the podcast. But I did just want to say that really is a part of it that I think is so important, because I like that kind of big picture. You go around and you hit so many different things and you give them due time, you know, but you're not getting caught up in something, whether it is your own self, you describe it and then you move on and how it relates to other things. But the whole thing is just so crazy, man, because I could only imagine, like I was saying, if I've only ever done like video and writing and stuff. It wouldn't be that weird for me to be involved with some idol or something like that in that respect. But it's just to actually be pitted against the person that you're, you know, and the way that you had to kind of, you jumped right into the fray. It's such an interesting story. And it's a perspective you don't often see, because, like I said, so much of fan appreciation or writing is just unabashed love and heaping admiration on this on a human being and making them into something that they're not. We're all human. And that's something that you say again and again, is that Prince was a human being. And though he may have inspired you creatively, artistically, and just, you know, in your job, even as we see, he was a man. And we have to look at what that says about us as a society and as individual people. That's kind of, we're using him as a lens, kind of. And that's a really interesting lens there. So is there anything that you want to kind of end with, or anything that you didn't have a chance to talk about that you want to address?
No. Other than to just, you know, circle back to where we started and express my gratitude, you know, for your having me on and for your listeners for listening. And, you know, just that it's been a while since we've talked, but I really consider you, you know, a personal friend that has enriched my life, you know, over the years. And I'm just grateful to have the opportunity to talk, you know, after all these years, really.
Oh, definitely, man. We'll do it again much sooner this time. And I appreciate you coming on. And like I said, everybody, Alex is my friend, but this is some great stuff and it's really interesting. And we do, I mean, we see what we're all living with today in idolization and kind of putting people on a pedestal is kind of the American way. And it's refreshing when we're able to keep our feet on the ground and still look at a superstar through the lens of their humanity, which I think is ultimately important for us all to do with each other. Right, baby?
Beautifully said. Beautifully said.
Well, you inspired
me. Gotten deep.
All right. Well, Alex, thank you so much. I hope, you know, man, maybe we can do this again after Game of Thrones is over. Oh, hey, you're going to be watching Game of Thrones?
You know, I never got in. I tried so many times. I tried like, and it was, I never would have tried as many times, but for you and Donald and Heath. I don't know what it is. It just struck me as too fantasy, you know. Yeah. I don't know. And you know, I feel like such a killjoy because everyone else loves the show. So, but I march in my own drummer as usual, I guess, right?
I love it, man. I love it. Well, we'll get you on, and I know there are things. Well, hey, man. I'm going to keep on doing this show. And when they come back with like these Breaking Bad movies, or if they ever do Lost again, I'll get you on here to talk some pop culture and fun, man. We'll do it again soon.
That would be great. Yeah. I think there's going to be a Sopranos movie.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Prequel. So absolutely. If we can find anything that I like, you know, I'd love to come up. Any excuse to talk to you would be great.
All right. You're the best. Thanks so much, Alex.
Okay, Axel. You take care. Thank you so much.
All right. That was a fantastic interview with Alex Hahn. I'm going to have all the links. He's actually setting it up for me. I'm going to have all the links in the show notes. It'll be on the website. I'll put that on our Facebook page, on the Twitter. And I'm going to just keep on pumping Alex, tell you, listen to his podcast, go ahead and subscribe and follow all those links because he's a great guy and he's doing the creative thing, man. I want to support him and it's great stuff. The podcast is so fun. It's such an interesting, weird story. You're going to love it. Thanks everybody for listening today. I'm going to be back on Friday. I'm going to do a little bit more traditional episode. We got a lot of news to catch up on. There's things premiering, there's new shows, so I'm just going to do a basically kind of, this is a suggestion Brett was saying, hey, get back to doing that. I want to get back to doing that, so I will, and I'm going to talk about all that stuff on Friday. I hope you all enjoyed the episode on Monday with Game of Thrones next Monday. I think I'm going to finish season 2 by next Monday, and I'll have a kind of another stream of consciousness. I'm telling you, I am watching Game of Thrones in a totally different way. I don't know why this has happened. Maybe it was the break and I didn't watch anything for like a year and a half. I said, nope. Every time I want to watch Game of Thrones, I said, nope. I stop. See, sometimes in life, it's good to say no. It builds up the anticipation, you know? And then I'm seeing it in a totally different way, with new eyes, and I'm really enjoying it, and I can't wait to bring that to you all. So thanks again to Alex. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Cufflinks.com, the best. We'll be back on Friday. Peace. Oh, something awaits me. Oh, someone arraigns me, and I'm all to blame. Nothing allays me, and all this fate now collapses under all. It's all
this change